What's up, everybody? Welcome to the TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. I'm Thomas.
I'm Tyson.
I studied exercise physiology and competed in many various sports ranging from wrestling to ultra running. I use that knowledge to combine today's science with ancient wisdom to live an optimal lifestyle and to spread that information onto the masses.
I'm a lifelong weightlifter and I'm obsessed with health and wellness. My degree in biology, with an emphasis in neurobiology, physiology, and behavior, allows me to take a deep dive into the most current literature and bring that information to you.
Thank you for listening to the podcast. If you'd like to show your support, please rate and review on your favorite podcast provider, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, or SoundCloud. Also, sign up on our website, tntwellnessandnutrition.com, for all of our up-to-date content.
Let's get this started.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of TNT Wellness and Nutrition Podcast. This is episode 85. Today, we're finishing up our series on the ketogenic diet. We're going to talk about, honestly, what everybody wants to do. Everybody wants to live forever, or at least stay young for as long as they possibly can. So today, we're going to talk about the mitochondrial theory of aging and how going low carb or going on a ketogenic diet can literally help you stay younger for as long as possible. And we'll go in behind, you know, we'll dive into all the details of why that is. But first, let's do a quick check-in. So, Tom, how's your week been?
It's been pretty good, but, you know, nothing new. Just pretty much staying at home, walking the dogs once, maybe twice a day, doing a couple short little runs here and there, trying to stay busy around the house. But, yeah, not a whole lot new with me. What about you?
Yeah, it's crazy, man, with we're in California, so we're obviously like on a strict quarantine. You have to stay inside, but For me, not too much has changed. I've just still, you know, doing my damn thing every day. And luckily, like I talked about last week, I live my life on quarantine anyways. So, you know, not too much has changed for me. I haven't really noticed much. I'm not sick. Nobody I know is sick. And so far for me, nothing has changed, thank God. Hopefully it stays that way, you know?
Yeah, good.
Yeah.
The only thing I really miss is the grocery store. I don't know, that's someplace I used to go like every other day, something like that. I go pretty often, just, you know, grab something like real quick for dinner for the next couple of days. And I don't know, I've always enjoyed going to the grocery store for whatever reason, just like kind of walking up and down the aisles and kind of like peaceful.
Yeah, me too.
But now like this last few weeks, like everywhere you look, everybody's in masks. Like they see you, they run the other direction. Everybody's like in gloves and everything. It's such a weird like feeling. Like, I can't wait to get back. Like, that's one thing I'm like, I really miss is just like, what happened to a normal grocery store experience?
Yeah. You know, okay. So, I mean, if you listen to this podcast and if you know me, you know, I wake up early and Tom also wakes up very early as well. So I'll wake up early, I'll train. And then as soon as I'm done training, I eat and then I go to the grocery store. And I do that probably 3 times a week. So I'm at the grocery store, usually, honestly, around 8 a.m., maybe a little earlier. But the grocery store, like my local one, it changed the time. So you have to be like old as shit to go before 12. Like if you're not a senior citizen, you can't go before 12 o'clock. So that's the only thing that affected me. It changed.
Most of them will, go ahead.
No, yeah, it just changed my the time I actually have to go to the store. That's all.
Okay. Damn, babe. That's a pretty big opening. Mm-hmm. Well, I guess you have a lot of older people that live in Davis, right?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Most grocery stores, it seems like they're giving you like an hour or two. For like the senior citizens or like and the first responders, they have like the first crack, like the first like hour or two when they're open. But yeah, not until 12. Is there a limit for how many people they're allowing inside the store?
See, there's not, no. So I just go in like normal.
Okay.
Thank God. Yeah, I've heard there's like lines outside of stores everywhere else.
Yeah. The stores I go to, I haven't seen lines, but I've driven past other grocery stores with like a line all the way like around the building and stuff. It's just like, man, that's crazy.
Yeah, see, if that happens to me, I'm going to be real salty. Like, I really would be.
Once we get that stimulus check, we decided, like, we're just going to go to Costco and just, like, blow as much of that stimulus check at Costco.
Yeah.
So I don't have to go to the grocery store all the time. Like, that's where, like, most of that money's going.
Yeah, no, trust me. Yeah, most of my money goes to food, too. But, yeah. But, yeah, no, it's all with me. Same old stuff. And so I was happy to kind of finish this series on ketogenic diet. So everyone knows I'm very pro-low-carb. I don't think it's ideal for, you know, 100% of people out there, but maybe like 98%. Like, I think there's only a select few people who really need to have a carb-heavy diet or even just, like, use carbs in moderation. And, you can listen to the past like 10 episodes of the podcast to figure out why just going low carb, going on a ketogenic diet is honestly the species appropriate diet. That's something we say a lot. Our body's designed to run off fat. Our body's designed to run off a decent amount of protein. And that's what I think most people would honestly function properly on. And there's a million reasons why. But we decided to finish the series on ketogenic diet. And even though I love keto, I'm so sick of like researching on it. Like, I don't know how many times I Googled keto in these past few weeks. Like, I'm just sick of it. So just finishing on aging and finishing on why we get old, how we get old, and how going low carb can help with that. And I guess you want to start with that quote from the book, because that's really what this is about.
Yeah, so I pulled this quote from a mitochondria book. I forget the full name of it, but it's by something Lee. I forgot his name. Do you remember the author's name?
Yeah, No Lee.
No Lee. Okay, thank you. Mm-hmm. So the quote is, the goal is to die as young as possible, as late as possible.
I love that. Yeah,
that's such a good quote. Like, that's one of the very few quotes from like a book that I read, and I was like, oh my God, I'm going to memorize this. Like, that's like my new motto for life.
Yep. No, it's so true, because what's the point of living to 100 if you're broken as shit? You know what I mean? Like, you want to live to 100 and be strong.
Yeah, like, do you really want your last, like, 20, 30 years to be you in a wheelchair, on oxygen, just, like, barely surviving? Like, no, you want that quality of life. You want quality of life and quantity of life. You want both of them.
Yep. Yeah, something I say to a lot of people who realize how, like, regimented I am, they go, what do you do? Like, what's your goal? I said, my goal is to be the strongest 80-year-old you've ever seen in your life. You know what I mean? Like, I want you to see me and be like, yo, that guy's jacked, and think that I'm 50 and I want to be 80. You know what I mean?
So you're going for that, like, Marxist in life?
100%. Yeah, yeah, that's a primal guy. Google that guy, because he's jacked. But how old is he?
I think he's late 60s, maybe early 70s, and but he still plays, like, I know he does a lot of ultimate frisbee with like college kids and is out there.
I think
just
he surfs.
Them.
Yeah.
He used to be like a extreme like endurance athlete doing stuff like the Ironman triathlon, like the Hawaii one, which is like the toughest one in the world. Yeah, he's a badass.
Yeah, he's a beast. Yeah. And rich. Super rich. But yeah, so let's just get into it. Like, honestly, I think the layman out there, or just most people, would think that by now scientists would have like the why and how we age down to a science, but honestly, we don't. There are various theories out there about why we age. One thing we do know, though, is that no matter the species, we all age in a similar way, just at different rates. If you live long enough, you will eventually suffer from various degenerative diseases that will eventually lead to death. That's just how it works. We know that much. But let's just first go through some of the theories out there as to why we age, because there's a lot. So I think most people in like the biohacker community, and I say that kind of in quotes. So if you don't know, biohackers are just people interested in extending the quality of their life through either drugs or supplementation. And who's that guy? You know, the biohacker guy, Ben Greenfield. Yeah, yeah. So Google that guy. He's like the definition of a biohacker.
He does all sorts of crazy things, and he's always promoting something new, some new device, some new supplement, like all sorts of crazy stuff.
Yeah, it's honestly out there. It's even way more stuff than I would normally do. I'm more just about getting your diet in line and getting your like lifestyle in line, but these people do everything. But if you're in that community, most likely you've heard of telomeres. So when someone gets a biological age test, what they measure 99% of the time is how long your telomeres are. And this is honestly a scam. So telomeres are different lengths in different tissues, and they don't have the biggest role in aging anyways. They do have a role in cell division, but that's about it. But let's just break down like what telomeres are. They are caps at the end of chromosomes that slowly wear down over our lifespan. So to break down that even further, if you don't know, chromosomes are the structures that contain all of our DNA. Basically, what makes us, us. Every time a cell divides, which is called mitosis, one cell copies its entire set of chromosomes and creates a clone of itself. The only thing is, this process isn't 100% efficient. So nothing in our body is, honestly. Everything runs, you know, at best, it's going to be 99%. So every time our cell divides, some of the chromosomes aren't copied fully or correctly. This is where telomeres come into the equation. the end of the chromosomes that don't get copied properly are covered in these telomere caps. This part of the chromosome doesn't encode for anything. Think of it kind of like junk DNA. So it doesn't matter if it's copied correctly or not. Therefore, as long as the telomeres are in place, the inefficiencies of mitosis won't affect the DNA that actually matters, like the DNA that encodes for proteins that we actually use, you know? Once these telomeres are gone, however, the part of the chromosome that isn't copied properly will result in genetic damage to tissues that will affect us eventually. That takes forever in most tissues, honestly. And like I said earlier, it's different in most tissues. So to break that down, like basically the heart telomeres are a different length than the telomeres in the cells that make up our intestines. So do telomeres play a role in aging and disease? Yes, they do. Do you want to keep them as long and healthy as possible? Yes, you do, 100%. But are they the primary driver in aging? No, they're not. And this is a quote I pulled from the mitochondria book Tom mentioned earlier. So, and I link all these studies and the book on the website. So just check out TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com so you can purchase the book. It's an Amazon link. It's right there. So this is a quote talking about that. Quote, telomeres exhibit such varying patterns across species and even within different tissues of our human body that they can't possibly be the primary cause of aging. End quote. So, I mean, I think that's pretty definitive that telomeres matter, but they're not the be-all, end-all. Like, we shouldn't measure them and then just say that's it.
Yeah, and right now, those are, telomere length is kind of like the gold standard of, like, measuring your biological age. And, yeah, you can get two tests with the same company, and you'll get two different results. Like, one might say you're 37, one might say you're 31. So, like, you can get completely different results from the same test from the same company. So kind of like, what's the point of even measuring it if you're not going to get reliable data?
Yeah, exactly. So another theory that's out there is called the free radical theory of aging. To put this in context, not everyone has heard of free radicals, but everyone at this point has heard of antioxidants. Everyone tells you to drink red wine or eat your fruits high in antioxidants, things like, you know, blueberries. And the only thing good about antioxidants are the fact that they can neutralize some of the damage done by free radicals. So that's what free radicals are.
Yeah, so just to kind of like add upon that, so you're talking about like blueberries. Another thing that gets touted for being healthy is like red wine, because like they have a lot of antioxidants. That's one of the reasons a lot of people have a hypothesis that red wine is like a healthy alcohol versus like something like beer that doesn't have as many antioxidants.
It's a resveratrol. Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, resveratrol. I do not remember.
It's, I forget. I just read a bunch about it, but yeah, it's one of those.
Yeah. I haven't heard it for a while. Yeah. Resveratrol,
something like that.
Okay, whatever. It's just stumbling over that word. Yeah. It doesn't matter because it doesn't really play that big of a role in the human body. So the antioxidant from red wine, maybe it's a little bit healthier than something like beer, but what really makes a difference between wine drinkers and beer drinkers, the reason why wine drinkers are healthier, has a lot to do with other stuff. Like, what do you pair beer with? You pair that with like pizza, you pair that with like a burger and some french fries. So yeah, like everything else you're consuming along with that beer generally isn't that healthy. If you think of like wine drinkers, you think of normally like either upper class or a little bit wealthier people. You think of something like steak, you think of fish and like cheese, veggies. So yeah. It's like, mm-hmm. What you're consuming that wine with is such healthier compared to what you're consuming that beer with. So it's not really like one alcohol is better than the other one because of antioxidants. It's really what else is going on in that meal. That's what makes the difference. That's why wine drinkers are generally healthier than beer drinkers. It has nothing to do with antioxidants.
Yeah, that, you know, I know that, right? But that's going to blow some people's minds, because you see her like so many studies about, oh, these people drink X amount of glasses of wine a week and they're healthier than average. But it's so much more than just the wine. Like the wine kind of reflects your like socioeconomic class. That changes your like access to health. You know what I'm saying? Like it's so much more than just antioxidants.
Yeah. And honestly, if resveratrol was like some like master antioxidant, somebody would be monetizing that. Somebody would just have that as a supplement and would be making billions of dollars because it would keep you healthy forever. But since that's not the case, it's, you know, it's obviously not the thing that's making the difference.
Yeah. No, I mean, you can buy that antioxidant in a pill. You 100% can. But we're going to actually talk about, towards the end of this podcast, like, why you really don't want to take a high dose of antioxidants in a pill form, because that messes up a whole, like, cascade of, like, signaling that happens in our cells. So, but yeah, it's just, there's so much more to that whole debate, like beer versus wine, that it's about what you pair with the drink, not the drink itself. But yeah, to go back to the free radicals. So free radicals are what, like, damages our body. Antioxidants protect us from free radicals. And free radicals are 100% a player in why we age. There's no doubt about that. But again, just focusing on them alone doesn't paint the full picture. It goes back to how mitosis, which, remember, just cell division, isn't 100% efficient. Therefore, our body has telomere caps to help mitigate that inefficiency. Metabolism, or just the breakdown of food for energy, isn't 100% efficient either. It produces free radicals as a byproduct. That's a price we pay for extracting energy from the food we need. And so our body produces antioxidants to combat that. So what's damaging about free radicals? They cause something called oxidation. Basically, free radicals are chemically unstable molecules that go around jacking electrons from surrounding molecules. That's all oxidation means. It's loss of an electron. By stealing an electron from a molecule or atom that doesn't want it taken, it damages that molecule and leads it to becoming dysfunctional. So that's really what's damaging about free radicals. And this theory states that free radical leakage, which the vast majority comes from the mitochondria, because that is where the process we, like the food we eat, that's where it all gets broken down, is the reason we age. The free radicals slowly damage tissues and cells, and over time this manifests in the typical signs of aging. This isn't 100% wrong, but like again with the telomere theory, it doesn't paint the full picture, and here's why. This is a quote. Quote, if free radical leaks from the mitochondria cause aging, if this is true, then boosting our antioxidant capacity should reverse the signs of aging and extend lifespan. This doesn't happen. The reverse actually has been shown. Increasing antioxidant capacity can decrease lifespan, and increasing oxidative stress can prolong lifespan, end quote. So that's very backwards to what all we hear in the media. It just shows how complex our body really is, and this stuff isn't as black and white as some people say. Like, you know, like Tom said, if that antioxidant red wine is so powerful, we should be able to take 5 pills of that a day and live forever. But it's been shown if you take a shit ton of antioxidants, you can actually decrease your lifespan, you can actually cause damage. Also, that oxidative damage, which is the damage done by free radicals, can increase lifespan. So it's way more complex than people think, you know?
Yeah, when I first heard that, I was like, man, that is so backwards to what you would think. That's so backwards, like, logically. Like, that doesn't really... Like, that was, like, a really hard couple of dots for me to connect, you know? Because mm-hmm. That doesn't really seem like it makes that much sense.
Yeah. But really, so what it's about is not about the amount of antioxidants produced. It's about how tightly our species' mitochondria are sealed, preventing excessive leakage of electrons. So here's a quote talking about that. Quote, mitochondrial reactive oxygen leakage is a strong predictor across species for longevity. The better a species does protecting its mitochondria, the longer a species lives, end quotes. So honestly, so a few examples. Birds have very tightly sealed mitochondria, therefore they live a very long time. Rats have a very leaky mitochondria, therefore they don't live very long at all. One of the biggest holes in the free radical theory is the exercise paradox. So what is the exercise paradox? It revolves around the fact that athletes or people who work out frequently are exposed to more oxygen and therefore generate more free radicals, yet they live longer, healthier lives than people who don't work out. And if you're thinking, like, what do you mean athletes are exposed to more oxygen? Just think how hard you breathe when you run. Like, you're obviously taking in more oxygen than you would, like, just resting. That's what I mean. And it's honestly I didn't know, like, the exact amount more oxygen we take in, but it's crazy how much more. It's, like, magnitudes more. So I could pull the quote talking about that. So, quote, oxygen is essential for energy production and dangerous when not totally controlled. At rest, the body uses 1 kilogram of oxygen per day. That's 0.7 grams per minute. During maximal exercise, this can increase to 10 to 20 grams per minute. That's upwards of 30 times more oxygen. As 1 to 2% of oxygen is lost in normal mitochondria, Again, because nothing in our body is 100% efficient. This translates to 10 to 20 grams of O2 loss per day at rest and 200 milligrams per minute at maximal exercise, end quote. So that's pretty crazy. You know, that's a lot of damage being done, yet these people live longer. That's the paradox.
Yeah, that's a lot more oxygen, a lot more free radicals. It seems like that should be causing these people to drop dead within a matter of like 10 years, not living long, healthy lives.
Mm-hmm. And that goes back to the quote earlier talking about some we load some people with antioxidants and they live less, and we load these people with oxidative damage and they live longer. It's because this oxidative damage acts as a signal for our body to repair and respond to the damage in a stronger way. So that's really what's going on. But just think about it, like free radicals and oxidation, you know, what free radicals cause in our body have been occurring in humans since the beginning of our evolution. Don't you think our body developed a system that would take advantage of these things? And I think that goes back to, like, you think, I like the way Tom thinks about things sometimes, because he thinks about things differently than me, so it's good for me to bounce ideas off of him. So doesn't that make sense to you? Like, there's no way free radicals can be 100% bad, because if they were, our body wouldn't have, it would have designed a better system, where our bodies are very smart.
Yeah, we would have died off a long time ago unless it seemed to have some sort of advantage. Everything has to have some sort of advantage in evolution, or those genes wouldn't have been passed on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, or we exactly. wouldn't be the dominant species that we are. Like, it's kind of like one or the other.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, like that's kind of what you were going into. All that damage just kind of forces your body to constantly repair itself. That damage just kind of just shows, hey, here's the weak link.
Fix this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just without all those weak links popping up, you wouldn't really know how dysfunctional you really are until it's too late.
That was too late. Yeah, exactly. So that's where the mitochondrial theory of aging comes into play. So we're pulling a lot, like Tom said earlier, from the book by No Lee. It's called Mitochondria and the Future of Medicine, and the book Power, Sex, and Suicide by Nick Lane. And out of those two books, I 100% you recommend the Mitochondria and the Future of Medicine by No Lee. It's that book is genuinely one of my favorite books of all time. Power, Sex, and Suicide is one hell of a book. I've read it once. I've tried to read it twice, and it damn near broke me both times. It's just very complicated. It's very dense, and I just don't think I'm smart enough for it. It's like straight up. It's legit the hardest book I've ever had to read. And
I went through the Mitochondria book I think two or three times. I know for sure twice, and I think a couple of chapters three times just because they're kind of dense. And yeah, he pulls so many quotes from that Power, Sex, and Suicide book. It really made me want to read it until I talked to you about it.
Yeah, don't. Yeah, that's exactly why I read it, because this was obviously a huge, influence on him. So I always do that. I always look through references and go to the source material. But this time I regret it, man. Holy hell. That book was too much. But so the mitochondrial theory of aging basically ignores exogenous sources of free radicals, and its main point is that the mitochondria is the body's main source of free radicals that are linked to aging. The free radicals generated here damage mitochondrial DNA, and mitochondrial DNA doesn't have the same defense systems as nuclear DNA, things like histones. Histones are like protective caps that we have around chromosomes. Once the damage out in the mitochondria outpaces the repair, the mitochondria becomes dysfunctional, which is the first step in aging, making mitochondria our true biological clock. So instead of looking at how long telomeres are and guessing our cellular age, we should look at how healthy our mitochondria are and guess our real cellular age. Because when our mitochondria are young, we are young. When our mitochondria are old, we are old. I really don't care how old you are, you know, chronologically, right? Or whatever the right word is. But, you know, from based off a calendar, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's chronologically.
Is it? That's right.
chronological age means, yeah, your calendar age, and then your biological age, which is how old like your mitochondria are, or your telomere length, that type of thing.
Yeah. So differences in the mitochondrial theory are that just pretty much it states that free radicals aren't just a problem. Because that's the difference. The free radical theory of aging just blames everything on free radicals. But the mitochondrial theory kind of shifts the focus and says, you know, no, they're not just a problem. They're here for a reason. They have to be. But the role, like why they're there, is they tell the cell how healthy their mitochondria are. When oxidation, again, that comes from free radicals, becomes high, it signals transcription factors that are sensitive to the redox state to turn genes on that will encode for proteins that will make enzymes that will bring down the oxidative damage. Without free radicals, so that signal, without that signal, the whole system would fail, and the mitochondria would fail to adapt to their changing environment or demands. The mitochondrial theory of aging also explains why the cell doesn't have more antioxidants than it needs. If there were too many, it wouldn't be sensitive to the changes in the redox state. So like a cell could, I don't know, be so damaged, but if you flood it with antioxidants, it'll never sense that oxidation, and a broken-ass cell will live way too long, and you know what that leads to, right? We covered it a few weeks back.
We covered it in a two-part episode, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Cancer. Yeah, that's cancer. That's 100%. Cancer right there.
Yeah, when a cell doesn't die when it's supposed to die. Cancer
is that it does have a ton of antioxidants.
Yep.
So that damage doesn't really become that aware.
Exactly. Like, it masks the damage is what it does. Yeah. And this is one of the reasons supplementing with high doses of antioxidants doesn't extend lifespan and can cause problems, because it allows a dysfunctional cell to live longer than normally should. Like I said, the high antioxidant content will mask the dysfunction. So it's not just the fact that, oh, antioxidants are good, so more is better. It's like, no, if we're supposed to have this concentration in the cell, say like 5 whatever millimoles, that's what we're supposed to have. Having 10 doesn't make it better. And it's just, that's the gist of it.
Yeah, so instead of eating foods or taking supplements that are high in antioxidants, it's better to eat the building blocks of those antioxidants.
And let your body do it. So your
body can make them.
Yep, exactly. Because your body will make the right amount when it needs to. Exactly. So aging...
Your body knows what it's doing.
Yep,
we don't.
We don't. Exactly. We're just guessing over here. Aging is really about atrophy. So over time, you lose or you have less cells to do the same amount of work as you previously did. Think of like sarcopenia or osteoporosis, which is like loss of bone mass and muscle mass that usually accompany aging. You know, you're not going to see some 9-year-old dude with 20-inch arms. You know, it doesn't happen. And the mitochondrial theory of aging explains why this happens. So cells become dysfunctional over time. It just happens, okay? Nothing in our body's perfect. The mitochondria become damaged, and this triggers a process called apoptosis, which is just programmed cell death. Usually, a new cell will take its place, and nothing is noticed or changed. But over time, our body simply runs out of the building blocks to create new fresh cells. Things like stem cells, our body runs out of. So now, enough of the cells in a certain organ have triggered apoptosis and died. They weren't replaced with new healthy cells. Now you have less cells to do the same amount of work that's needed to function properly. And I think a real like simple example is to think of heart failure. So you have less cells to produce the same amount of force needed to keep the heart beating strong. So of course the heart will beat with less force, causing issues. So this stuff happens, you know, when you turn 45, 55, stuff like that, your body simply has less cells in it. It's not that confusing, right?
No, not at all. And yeah, that makes sense, because some of the newest science around like anti-aging involves like stem cells and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
That stuff's like way too new for me. And there's a lot of people making a lot of money off of it. So it's really hard for me to kind of know what's real and like know what's beneficial and what's going to have long-term effects. It's all just too new for me. So I haven't really taken that deep of a dive into it or really been that interested in it. But I know that's like one of the most popular things when it comes to anti-aging.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think, honestly, by the time me or you are whatever, 60, 70, I think that might be an option for us, because a big option now for like, what is it, anti-aging clinics is human growth hormone. So when you get in your 30s, 40s, 50s, your body starts producing less HGH, so you can supplement with it, and it will help you extend lifespan. It'll increase muscle mass, increase collagen synthesis, things like that. But 20 years ago, HGH would cost you thousands and thousands of dollars a month. Like, literally, you have to be a multimillionaire to do that. But nowadays, you know, $200, $300 a month, and you can be on HGH therapy your entire life. And I think that's what it's like right now. If we want to do anything with stem cells, we would have to be a multimillionaire. That's just what it is. But hopefully in 30, 40, 50 years, they'll have the science down. They'll have like the scale figured out so they can mass market this stuff and it'll be cheaper.
And hopefully by then they'll know what the long-term effects are. If, you know, if there are some like major side effects that they just didn't know about, mm-hmm. or if it is completely healthy.
Yeah.
No, like, those are the things I'm kind of more curious about.
Yeah.
Because we don't know what we don't know yet.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm not trying to be a guinea pig when it comes to that.
No, I get it. Yeah, 100%. So that's pretty much the gist of the mitochondrial theory. That's the one I agree with. That's one Tom's agree with. It makes sense from my current knowledge of health and nutrition. And pretty much keep your mitochondria young and you will stay young. We've been saying that, I feel like, for years and for months, but it's true. And now I kind of want to pivot into how to protect our mitochondria. So things you should avoid to keep our mitochondria healthy. Because when they're healthy, you're healthy. And I first wanted to start with a big one that honestly no one talks about. And I think a lot of people abuse this unknowingly because they just think it's kind of a get out of jail free card every time. And it's antibiotics. They are so routinely prescribed nowadays, but they cause direct injury to the mitochondria. And you hear this, if you know, like if you're, Tom knows, Tom used to be a wrestler. If you hear any like UFC fighters talk about it, you'll hear athletes on antibiotics before like big games. They say it crushes their energy levels and they're not wrong. Like it directly hinders the mitochondrial ability to produce ATP and damages mitochondrial DNA, which would obviously be a problem during a match when you need to produce the peak amount of energy possible. So there was a whole list. The paper's on the website, TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. talking about all this, but I just pulled probably the most like old school common antibiotic. Everyone's heard of penicillin, you know, and it increases the marker for mitochondrial damage by 720%, crazy, and decreased ATP production by 75%. So this is why you feel shitty when you're on antibiotics. This is it, you know, and no one talks about it.
Yeah, those are two staggering numbers.
Huge numbers. And there was a list, I think there was 5 antibiotics on there. And this was like a general ballpark. It wasn't like any of them were good. They were all terrible. Yeah.
Yeah, so it might not even be the reason, like the infection that you're taking the antibiotics that might be causing all that damage. It might be the antibiotics itself that's really making you feel like shit. Mm-hmm. Man, that's crazy to me.
Yeah, I mean, it goes back to remember, like you've said it before, with cancer treatments, like a lot of the times the drugs will give you worse side effects than the damn cancer, you know?
Yeah, yeah, that makes a lot of sense, especially when it comes to it's like sports like wrestling or like boxing, where you're getting a lot of wounds and, you know, infections are kind of likelier.
And like sports,
I mean,
like
I guess
that.
You throw football in there too, where you might be needing to take some antibiotics to deal with an infection. Yeah, man, like that's gonna like destroy your playing ability.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and actually reading that paper, I learned something very very interesting. And like I said, I've said it before, I don't really need more reassurance, I guess, that I'm on the right path with my diet right now. Like everything I know, everything I read reassures me. But this one thing I thought was very cool, and it's that this specific biomarker for mitochondrial DNA damage is actually used as a cancer biomarker. So here's a quote about that. Quote, the amount of damage to the mitochondrial DNA can be estimated by AOHDG in the urine. Interestingly, this test also predicts cancer risk, not the type of cancer, but rather the amount of DNA damage which leads to cancer, end quote. So honestly, this just further supports our keto and cancer podcast. So if you want to learn more, check that out. It's a great podcast in my opinion, but I thought that was a great little tidbit, you know?
Yeah, I didn't know there was a marker like this out there.
I never heard of it. I never heard of it, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Makes total sense. And I'm wondering if that marker can, like, kind of pretty much all the diseases that we talked about, because almost every disease that we talked about with keto being beneficial for it has something to do with the mitochondria. And if this is measuring the amount of damage to mitochondria, I would think it's probably a good predictor for almost all those diseases.
Yeah, I bet if we measured it for damn near everything, it would be high. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, that is true. But another thing I want to talk about, which is also very commonly prescribed, sadly, is statins. And so the primary source of oxidative damage from free radical production is from the electron leakage from the mitochondria. And so the electrons in the mitochondria, to not make it complicated, it goes down something called the electron transport chain, and that generates ATP. But the electron transport chain needs CoQ10 to shuttle electrons from complex 1 and 2 to complex 3. This nutrient, CoQ10, is depleted when someone takes a statin. That's because the enzymatic reaction that statin stops, the production of cholesterol, is the same series of enzymes that produces CoQ10. The less CoQ10 you have, the more oxidative damage your mitochondria will be under, and you'll produce less ATP, which is obviously not a good thing. And if you didn't know, statins are just what they give somebody. If you go to a doctor and your cholesterol is 250, they're going to put you on a statin. They're going to, here's Lipitor. Lipitor is a statin. And it's the biggest scam in the history of medicine. No one should take a statin. And it's just, it's crazy, man. It really is. And little known fact, but statins increase all-cause mortality and most chronic conditions. And I'll say that again. They increase all-cause mortality. That means your odds of dying from anything increase when you take a statin. And it's one of the most commonly prescribed drugs in the country.
Yeah, and just so the heart is a very energy demanding tissue organ. Like, it's constantly running, constantly running. So why would you want to take something for heart disease that's going to make your heart less efficient and able to produce less energy and increase the amount of damage that's being caused to that organ? It makes absolutely no sense at all.
No, but these doctors, I mean, and they honestly just don't know. I mean, I understand they're overworked. I understand, you know, that you went to school in the damn dinosaur era. You just can't, you don't have the time to learn more things. You don't have the time or probably interest to understand why what you learned was wrong. So they just kind of, they've been told high cholesterol is bad. So they prescribe statins and they don't even think twice. And honestly, they've done more harm than good. They're killing a lot of people out there. And statins really upset me. They just do.
Yeah, I the more and more I learn about them, I just don't know why they're still living. Or why they were ever a thing.
Yeah, because of money, really. Let's just be honest, yeah. You know? So the mitochondria are susceptible to nutrient deficiencies, environmental toxins, and oxidative damage. The most powerful tool you have to keep your mitochondria healthy is a healthy diet. Here's a quote about that. Quote, optimize nutrient status to limit oxygen and high energy electron linkage in the electron transport chain. This is perhaps the most powerful anti-aging strategy we can provide our patients, end quote. So that's it, man. You get our diet in line and you will extend your lifespan. That's just a fact. And is there a diet out there that properly supports the health of our mitochondria, providing all the vitamins and minerals needed for it to function properly? Yep, there sure is. And you already know what I'm going to say. Obviously, it's a ketogenic diet, you know? Ketogenic diet produces less free radicals and upregulates your body's own antioxidant capacity, both of which increase the health of our mitochondria. And this is a quote from a paper called Ketogenic Diet, A Connection Between Mitochondria and Diet. It's a great paper. It's on the website as well. It's honestly pretty long. It's maybe like 10, 12 pages, but it's a really great paper. I recommend you should read it. And this is a quote from that. So quote, the keto diet produces less free radicals and upregulates your body's own antioxidant capacity, both of which increase the health of your mitochondria. Like I said earlier. It's just a great, man. It's just a great paper. And this is why the ketogenic diet is so powerful, you know?
Yeah, it causes less damage and it promotes healing.
Yep.
Like, that's exactly what you want.
That's what you want every day, all day. And there is, we talked about it with, I think it was with epilepsy. There was a lot of papers that said the ketogenic diet is a, what was the word? It wasn't sustainable. It wasn't a physiological diet. That's what they said. Like, you had to supplement vitamins and minerals because it's so low in grains. It's so low. It can be low in vegetables. So they just assume that the ketogenic diet doesn't provide enough vitamins and minerals, but that's not true at all. The ketogenic diet provides all the vitamins and minerals needed to support our metabolism without the harmful byproducts from a high carb diet. If you want to really learn more about that, listen to our podcast on clean fuels. We compared what happens when you fast. We compared what happens when you eat carbs. It's like markedly different. And just simply, fats are a cleaner fuel source.
But and you can make any diet nutrient deficient. If you don't follow like a well-formulated diet of any type of diet, you can become deficient in stuff.
Yeah.
So it's not just like a keto diet that can be nutrient deficient. Standard American diet is most likely going to be nutrient deficient. A vegetarian or vegan diet is going to be nutrient deficient. You could say that about damn near every single diet. So I don't know why they have to go out of their way to say it about a keto diet.
Yeah, because they don't say it for a standard American diet. They never say that.
Yeah.
Like, they never make that distinction for any other diet.
Yeah, it's just one of the things that just kind of like, okay, well, yeah, you're saying it. Technically, it's true. But I don't think you would go out of your way to say this about anything else. So we're kind of like, what's the point of throwing it in here?
Yeah, because they just want to bash keto. They just want to, I don't know. It's more nefarious than I think, and I don't like that, but it is what it is, you know? So I want to go through a little bit of certain vitamins and minerals you need to support beta oxidation, which is just the burning of fat for fuel, which you should be doing. So to produce FAD, which is like a high energy molecule, that's what our body, our mitochondria uses to kind of shift these electrons around. You need riboflavin, which is B2. To produce NADH, you need niacin, which is B3. You need carnitine to transport fatty acids into the mitochondria. You know, if you don't have that, none of this process starts. So B2, B3, and carnitine. What, like, source can you get those from?
I think pretty much every single animal source, or most of them.
Yep, animal sources, for sure. So what to support our TCA cycle? What do we need? We need iron. We need magnesium, and manganese. I was looking at manganese next to it. It looks like magnum. But so iron, magnesium, and manganese, those are all minerals. And beef is very high in all of these things. So it has all the B vitamins your body could ever need. It has iron and carnitine. And meat is a highly bioavailable source of magnesium. A lot of people simply look the value, some chart like on the internet, for the amount of vitamins and minerals in food with no context on the bioavailability of those vitamins. And that's something I think really distinguishes me and you. Like, a lot of people never talk about bioavailability. They say, you know, almonds have X amount of magnesium or almonds have X amount of calcium. But I'm like, they never factor in the phytates in the almonds that block absorption of those minerals.
Yeah, or you can just look at something like peanut butter has like 7 grams of protein and the egg has 7 grams of protein.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So you would think those things are equal, but no, the bioavailability is vastly different. Egg is far superior.
Yep, that's a good point as well. Yeah, protein matters. The protein source really does matter.
And I mean, this is your favorite quote. It's not what we eat that matters, it's what we absorb.
Yep, 1,000%. And our body just simply doesn't absorb incomplete sources of protein and vitamins and minerals that are bound to phytates. Our body doesn't absorb it, and no one talks about it enough, in my opinion. And this is something that a lot of people, manganese isn't something people talk about. It's a very, very small trace mineral. Our body does not need a lot of it. But in a lot of charts, because it's so limited, or it's found in such a small quantity, if you look at manganese in beef or manganese in chicken, it'll usually just say zero. But that's not true. Beef is a good source of manganese, but like I said, manganese is a trace mineral, meaning the body doesn't need a lot of it. Like, there is no RDA for manganese. There's no recommended daily allowance. But here's a quote talking about how much manganese is in there. There's 0.12 milligrams of manganese per 100 grams of beef. And so you can think about a pound, a little over 400 grams. So you're going to get maybe half a milligram of manganese per pound. And that may not seem like a lot, but that's enough because, again, if you factor in the bioavailability, your body is actually absorbing it. The manganese found in wheat, the manganese found in various grains, is bound to phytate, so your body doesn't absorb it. So even though there's technically more manganese in there, if your body doesn't absorb it, what's the point? So the ketogenic diet provides all the vitamins and minerals your body needs to function properly. It provides all the essential nutrients our mitochondria need to function properly and optimally. So that's what you need to follow to really keep your mitochondria healthy. And we've both read enough books at this point to be able to kind of distinguish the facts that we agree with and the facts that we don't. You know, you can't take everything, you know, like 100% truth, even if you really like the author, even if you really like the subject and the book. So there was a part of this book that is a little controversial in our opinion, and it covers a topic that we agree that the author maybe is a little ignorant on. But he just doesn't know it. You know, obviously, Tom said you don't know what you don't know. And that goes back to their opinion on calorie restriction versus the ketogenic diet for longevity. Because if you go into any sort of longevity posts or any sort of, if you read this book, the end recommendation will be to cut your calories. That is the recommendation to extend lifespan. And it's true that in all these studies that cut calories, they extend lifespan. But there's more to it. So, Tom, you want to talk on that a little bit?
Yeah, so this author mentions a few different studies talking about calorie restriction versus keto in terms of longevity. And one thing, I just have a big like pet peeve with the word calorie restriction is, so you want to, calorie restriction basically means you want to eat as little food as possible while still maintaining all your nutrients. So you're still able to get in everything you need without eating too much.
Like all your vitamins and minerals, things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that makes sense. So it's like the goal is don't eat like at a buffet every meal and, you know, don't undereat either. But the term calorie restriction to me promotes undereating, which is very dangerous. And it's also just not, it's not stable. I mean, like, I wouldn't say prisoners of war come out like super healthy, and that's a calorie restriction diet right there. Mm-hmm. That's what most people do. So like, that's kind of just one pet peeve of mine, is like the word calorie, or the phrase calorie restriction, doesn't have a solid definition, and it's not very applicable. Most people are going to apply that wrong. So yeah, the author talks about a couple different studies where.
But I want to stop you real quick, because you said the author compared calorie restriction to keto, but they really didn't. They just kind of promote calorie restriction without giving keto its proper due. That's what I think.
Yeah, because one thing that you can, another form of calorie restriction, while still eating the same amount of calories, is time restricted eating. So doing something like intermittent fasting. Mm-hmm. Where you just eat all your calories within an 8-hour window or a 6-hour window, mm-hmm. you're still consuming the same amount of calories, but now you're just doing it in a shorter period of time. That actually does have a major impact on longevity. It increases longevity by doing that intermittent fasting. So that's one thing. It's just like, well, that's not really calorie restriction then. So
that, I think that shows it's not just about calories. And misleading. Yeah, exactly. That one little fact right there shows it's not just about calories. Because if it was, time restricted feeding shouldn't help. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, exactly. And yeah, how do you do intermittent fasting? Well, you're going to be in most likely some form of ketosis during that intermittent fasting window. Mm-hmm. And it's also a lot easier if you're on a low carb ketogenic type diet during that feeding window too. If you're on a high carb diet, good luck doing intermittent fasting every single
You'll
day.
Be starving.
I don't know how you'd be able to do it.
Yeah.
So it's just kind of like, yeah, it's calorie restriction. I hate that term. It's very misleading. And it basically just tells everybody you should eat 1,200 calories a day for the rest of your life if you want to live a long time. And good luck with that. A bunch of deficiencies are going to pop up.
Yeah, and you're going to completely screw up your metabolism for sure. And I think I agree that calorie restriction, I mean, the data is sound as shit. The studies are out there. There's literally thousands of studies out there, right? That calorie restriction can extend lifespan. And that really goes down to you need two things needed to create free radicals. You need electrons and need oxygen to create superoxide free radicals. That's a big like boogeyman that goes around Jack's electrons, like I said earlier in the podcast. So low food equals low electrons. So without electrons, you won't have the free radical generation. And so obviously less free radicals, less damage, makes sense. But no one really ever gives the ketogenic diet the props it deserves because it promotes such a clean process that it can keep you, it can extend lifespan without you reducing your calories to such an extent that is not maintainable. So once again, the ketogenic diet provides a better solution to the problem of like extending life.
Yeah, so that's one aspect of it, is that it is causing less damage. But there's the other part of that too, is if you aren't following a calorie restriction, if you're just eating a buffet all day, every day, so not only are you causing more damage, but you're also not promoting healing. So your body's never really going to go through that healing. And I think that's what the really big part of that is. It's not really that you're, it has to do with the calories. It's just the amount of time spent eating. And that's why stuff like time-restricted eating plays such a big window, is you have all that time for your body to do all that repair caused by all that free radical damage. I think that's another aspect that not a lot of people look at.
Yep. No, and, I 100% yeah. agree.
Go ahead.
No, I 100% agree with that. I think just from a evolutionary standpoint, humans never ate from sunup to sundown. That's not been a thing.
Yeah, we're not cows. We don't spend 75% of our time that we're awake eating.
Yeah.
That's just not practical.
Just think during the quarantine, how many people right now eat 24/7 just because they're bored and they have access?
Oh, man. I'm about to get into that for the tip of the week. Do you want to get into that?
Yeah,
now,
let's just go into it. Yeah, go into it.
Do you have anything else you want to say?
No, that's it.
Okay, so the tip of my week, of the week, I mean, basically the tip of like our entire podcast is just go low carb. We just went through an entire series of diseases that can be significantly improved or prevented with a low carb ketogenic diet. Stuff like diabetes, heart disease, gout, autoimmune, cancer, Alzheimer's, epilepsy, and now aging. And honestly, when I think of aging, it's basically just like the absence of these diseases. Because once you get one of these diseases, you start aging real quick. And a good way to determine like if you're aging properly or not is think of your body as like a used car. would you buy your body? Like, you know, if you were shopping? Like, for me personally, I would. When I compare myself to other people my age, I'm in way better shape than most other people I know. So I know I'm doing the right things.
Yeah.
So that's just kind of like one way I think of aging, is if I'm doing good or not. Another thing, like another disease we didn't really talk about because there's just too much to deal with. I'm sure most people are tired of talking about it. It's just the coronavirus. We could add the coronavirus to this list because a ketogenic diet will for sure help out with that.
Mm-hmm.
The highest comorbidity with the coronavirus, that's like what diseases are causing death the most, it's hypertension, heart disease, and diabetes, those three. You would think it would have something to do with, I don't know, maybe autoimmune issues or smoking, something like that, COPD. You think those would be higher on the list because most people are dying from a lung infection? But no, it's all these diabetes, heart disease, hypertension, metabolic diseases.
Yeah, that's metabolic syndrome right there. That's it.
Yeah, insulin resistance. That's what we've been talking about forever.
Exactly.
So it's like, if you really want to live a long and healthy life, you need to go on a low-carb diet.
Boom. That's it, man. Yeah, and that's kind of a hot take nowadays, saying that a diet can help with the coronavirus, but that's one of the reasons why I'm so confident that I won't get sick. I mean, one, I'm just a cocky person, okay? I am who I am, but the other reason is I follow, my diet's on point, my training's on point. I don't know, man, I feel strong, and I don't think that my diet's going to allow me to get sick. That's just me, you know?
There's two ways of looking at it. You can either prevent yourself from getting it altogether, which this is a highly contagious disease, so the odds of you doing that are kind of small. Or you can do the other thing, and that's what me and you focus on, is we can reduce the severity of the disease.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have something like heart disease, hypertension, diabetes, something like that, the severity of the disease once you catch it is going to be so much worse than if you're somebody that's healthy and great metabolic shape like me and you. Like, that's what I'm doing. And I hate that there's so many, like, articles, so many so-called health experts and, like, fitness promoters out there just saying, you know what? Hey, you want to stress eat right now? Go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares. Like, this is the perfect time for you to be stress eating and all that stuff. It's like, no, this is not the time you should be promoting that shit. If anything, this is the right time to be talking about why our guidelines are so messed up and why we should switch everybody to a low-carb diet. Because this disease would not be impacting us at all if the nation was on a low-carb diet.
Yeah. Oh, man, I think, yeah, I mean, you hit a little nerve right there, but that's so true because I know everyone out there is stressed. I know people out there are, you know, their lives have been turned upside down. I totally understand. So people are going to eat like crap, but now is not the time to do that. Now is the time to buckle down, get focused, and stay on point with your diet because your body is going to need all the help it can. Then that's just a fact.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, hey, I'm not perfect. That first, like, week or so, I was stress eating quite a bit. You know, I had, like, ice cream a few times. I think I even did some donuts, which is the worst food out there.
The worst.
Like, you know, it definitely wasn't perfect. But, it's like, once I started seeing all the evidence out there that, it depends on what study you want to look at, but it seems like over 90% of the deaths are related to hypertension, diabetes, and heart disease. I was like, okay, yeah, like now's not the time to get fat. Now's not the time to give myself diabetes. Now's the time to do the opposite. If I really want to beat this disease and be as healthy as possible, give my body the best chance, is, hey, be as metabolically healthy as possible.
Yep, exactly. Well, all right. Well, that's the end of our ketogenic series. It's, I think we covered damn near everything. There's nothing else I want to cover. And, we'll change topics next week. We'll figure out something else to talk about. But I hope you guys liked it. You can find us at TNTWellnessAndNutrition.com. We're on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, so feel free to reach out anytime.
Yeah, please rate and subscribe if you haven't already, and share this podcast with a friend or family member. You can find our podcast pretty much anywhere podcasts are found: Apple Podcasts, Google Play, SoundCloud, Stitcher, and YouTube. I hope everybody has a happy and healthy week.